This is Playing Around with Paige Renee.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Playing Around. Teddy, before we get into everything, let's just catch up a little bit because you had a month in Mexico. Now you're back in Chicago. How is that?
I heard it snowed a little bit while I was gone. There were rumors of like 3 feet of snow and wind chill, minus 20. It seems perfectly pleasant to me. Landed, it was about 45 degrees, very little snow. So yeah, most people, my friends in Chicago completely hate me. I was in Cabo for the month of February, totally my wife's idea. She is the genius of the house. And hopefully I have a little tan that's still going, but back to reality now in Chicago. But good to be with you again, Paige.
I am actually happy you're back because I don't have to look at your ugly ass golf swing anymore. I mean, what is up with that takeaway? It's like Jim Furyk on steroids.
Well, it's good if I'm on steroids because I could probably use the extra boost that way. So that part is good. Hey, Jim Furyk, I was there at Conway Farms when the man shot 59. So, you know, unusual swings can produce good numbers. I shot 37 on the front of my last round, 45 on the back. So anyway, so there's potential there, but this is why I need you. You need me, I think, for occasional tips on sports betting, and I need you for social media advice and a lot of golf tips. I mean, if you think my swing is bad, my putting is even worse than my swing.
Oh, no. I don't even know if I want to see that after seeing your golf swing.
I don't know if you saw, I had like an 8-footer for eagle. I hit driver 3-wood to like 8 feet. And so I'm telling you, there's a little bit of potential there.
Well, I had a busy weekend too. Lots of traveling. Shot a commercial, which is pretty exciting, in North Carolina. Then we drove to Virginia and did some stuff with X-Golf there. So I am a little tired, not going to lie. But, you know, I've been doing this thing where I've been trying to do no sugar because I feel like when I have a lot of sugar, my anxiety gets really bad and I get anxious. And oh my gosh, I just let it fly this weekend. I ate so much sugar and I'm an addict. Like, it's really bad. Like I relapsed and I just like was at the airport and I was like, give me this and give me that. And I need more sugar. So now I'm back on the grind, but it's tough. It is tough to like be focused on that. I don't know if you have an issue with that, with like a food issue, but man, I cannot say no to sugar.
So I can say no to sugar, but I cannot say no to bacon. So I have an addiction, I'd say, to bacon, chips and salsa, probably Cape Cod potato chips. I could go several weeks without dessert. I could survive without that. But oh my God, I need the salty. Now I noticed in your content a few weeks ago, yeah, you were having, it was like Paige confession time. And I was waiting for something really bad. And it was like, guys, I had some chocolate. So I'm sorry. I think you're allowed to have chocolate and sweets, Paige. What are you starving yourself for? Come on.
Definitely not starving myself, but I think it's really difficult being on social media and having people always critique everything that you do and especially the way that you look. And that's partly on me because I've created my brand on an image. And so I have to keep up that image. And I think as I'm getting a little bit older, my metabolism isn't as fast as it used to be. And so I notice now that it's like, I don't have the ability to eat whatever I want and still look the way that I want to look. And so it's like, I'm trying to limit the sugar, not just for, you know, aesthetics reasons or purposes, but because, you know, I feel better when I don't have as much sugar. And I think that's a really big thing. And I've been trying to like run more and have more outlets in my life because, you know, I'm working a lot now. I'm stressed a lot of the times and I like stress eat sugar. But no, it's like, it's hard too because people are always like, you need to look a certain way, act a certain way. And so it's always like that constant, you know, pressure on your body image. I don't know if you've ever faced that. I don't think guys ever really talk about that either. And I think it is actually like a problem. Like guys still want to look good, but it's always the opposite of like, I always want to be lean and skinny and smaller. And guys always want to be like bigger. And you never want to call a guy like skinny or, you know, like lean. That's like the worst thing ever.
Yes. Yes. Please feel free to call me thin, but I hate skinny. Obviously, scrawny is horrible. Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of guys my age and they call themselves skinny fat. So
the dad bod.
Certainly the dad bod. Yeah, I mean, I can certainly understand that. But I think, speaking on behalf of your 3 million Instagram followers, that you should just relax a little bit. Don't stress about how you look. You look great. Everybody knows that. And it sounds like you enjoy running as much as I do. I run maybe once a year, and that's about enough for me. I will, you know, on the golf course, I want to walk. Like, I always feel there's a sense of satisfaction when you walk, because then even if you shoot 92 or 93 and you're disappointed in your score, you can still call up the health app and see your stats and see that you've walked 6 miles. So you're like, okay, today wasn't a complete zero.
Yeah, I think I want to get into running just not long distance, but I want to be able to consistently run a pretty fast mile. And that's what I've been doing every day, is just running a mile every day. But I was really interested by the feedback I got from a lot of people when I was talking about no sugar and running. And a lot of people had the same issues and problems that I did too. And so now we've kind of created this community of, like, I'm trying to do like a motivational Monday where I talk about my goals and have it be a little bit more positive, because I don't think people talk about it enough. And especially because I have such a large male audience,
yes,
I want them to feel like they're being heard and seen as well, because I do think there's a lot of body image issues and, you know, dealing with certain things around guys that maybe they're just too afraid to talk about. I think a lot of people are too afraid to talk about, because it's almost superficial if you care about how you look. And I don't think people ever really want to, like, mention that. And again, yeah, like, I shouldn't be obsessed with the way I look, but I'm not obsessed with it. But I think there is some kind of pride with, you know, carrying yourself well and wanting to look good. And, you know, first impressions are really important, and how people see you affects, you know, everything else in your life. And so I'm trying to, like, turn it into a positive, but that's what kind of what I've been dealing with. But while I was busy, we had some insane news in the golf world. I mean, I feel like everyone's world was just rocked when Tiger Woods got in his car accident.
Yeah, it's so true. I found out in, like, the worst possible way. So I'm on, like, a group text with a couple buddies, and somebody sends a message and it says, it was like a bad Tiger joke. It was like, hey, should Tiger have left driver in the bag? And then parentheses, too soon. And I'm looking at what he sent me, and it was the statement from, I guess, the LA Sheriff's Department. And I thought it was fake because it was in, like, the green and yellow Masters colors. So I'm looking at this, I'm like, what am I even looking at? So then I switched to the Golf Channel, and there was nothing on it on Golf Channel. So I'm like, what's happening here? And then, of course, you go to Twitter and you start to see, oh my God, this is real. And I guess my first two reactions were, like, one, I hope he's okay. And two, I hope that alcohol and prescription painkillers were not involved. Because, man, for any of, like, Tiger fans, or just for people who have a love of humanity, that's what you hope. Because, you know, how that HBO documentary started out with Tiger after he was arrested, we don't want to see anything like that again.
It was really scary. And when I think everyone first heard the news, it was pretty vague with the details that were coming out. You heard the jaws of life were used, and it almost felt like the Kobe incident all over again.
And almost an anniversary, right?
It was just really eerie with, you know, they just showed the picture of the car, not really any information on his status or how he was doing, just that he was in surgery. And I think everyone, rightfully so, freaked out. I mean, our hero, our golf hero, could potentially not be around anymore. And that was really, really scary to think about.
Yeah.
It was one of those moments where you just kind of, like, stop and think about your own life and everything that you're doing and what's going to happen if Tiger Woods, you know, isn't around anymore. And so luckily, I think this was probably the best case scenario where, you know, he seems to be doing much better from the news and, you know, what everyone's saying. But you're right, those kind of, like, conspiracy theories of, you know, what happened to Tiger. And I think a lot of the first reaction was maybe prescription pills, especially coming off of that back injury. So great to hear that that was not, you know, an issue. And it's sad that that's kind of the first thing that people thought of too. And I got a lot of comments saying, you know, was it a suicide attempt? Was it, you know, this or was it that? And it was really sad to hear that people were taking this accident and turning it into this, like, huge story.
Right.
And it wasn't. He got in a car accident. And I think that's what's so sad about social media is that people weren't, they were saying that was karma. And, you know, I tweeted about it and I got so many really surprising, sad responses to it. And it's just scary to hear about how people were viewing the accident and how negative it was.
Yikes. I didn't see any of that, man. People were saying it was karma because of the stuff in 09 and 2010. And
yeah.
Yikes. That's mean. God, you gotta start muting and blocking people, man. There is, we see so much of that on Twitter. And I think we'll talk about that with Max Homa, where like the 1 to 2 to 3% crazies just end up getting a lot of the attention. But yeah, I mean, look, there's a report in a newspaper today, a New York newspaper, maybe we won't specifically cite, but you know, there's speculation about, I mean, why were there no skid marks? Why was there no braking? I mean, it's so unusual sort of, look, I think a lot of us are guilty of texting and driving. So I think we all understand, we've all had those moments where for a split second you look up and you're like, oh my God, I'm on the shoulder. Thank God I'm, you know, okay. We don't have those moments where we literally cross over into the median and our car ends up flipping. So we do need to look into this. And honestly, the guy should not be driving a car anymore. Do you understand this, Paige? I mean, why do rich people drive cars? Like, Tiger is amazing in so many things, but he should not be behind a wheel at this point. He should have Jeeves or somebody driving him around to all these places. It's a better use for his time anyway. This is one of the things I do not get about rich people.
Well, I thought I want to get your perspective on this, you know, the journalist in you. So I've noticed when people are asking these kind of hard questions that they're almost being like canceled by other people by even insinuating that this was a problem or this is something that you need to look into. Do you feel that that's a problem that you can't even ask the hard questions anymore without people thinking that you're going to be canceled or that you're insensitive during this time?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. So I was covering baseball like during the steroid era, you know, and Sammy Sosa was blowing up every year, getting larger and larger, and Barry Bonds' head was growing. And years later, there was certainly a sense of how did you guys not ask more questions about this? Why didn't you guys figure this out? All right. And I understand that perspective. I can tell you as somebody who was covering baseball every day, it was just not something you could do. Like if I asked Sammy Sosa why he missed the cutoff, man, he would get pissed at me. Let alone if I say, hey, Sammy, I notice you're 40 pounds heavier than you were. Can you explain this? So it was a difficult thing to do. You're like, we needed Balco and we needed subpoenas and we needed all these things for the truth to come out. So then I did notice that there were people who were upset that the media, you know, were asking the police, hey, was alcohol involved? Like, that's our job. We have to ask these questions. So, you know, it's that old thing like, don't shoot the messenger. So don't say, you know, we weren't tough enough during steroids and we're being too tough now. This is what everyone is wondering. And part of it is too, like, I think just from a public safety perspective. Like if that roadway, if that area is so unsafe that a completely sober driver just drives off the road, I think we probably need to know and we need to make some more changes and put a real median there. So yeah, I mean, again, Twitter, man, that angry 5% ends up getting a lot of attention.
Yeah. Well, I think this is the big question is, do you think that Tiger is going to be okay? Will he ever play golf again? I think that's the question that everyone's asking right now.
It really is. And I'd love your perspective on this too. I mean, obviously 5 back surgeries in, things were already really tenuous. But you're talking to a guy who I had predicted like in, you know, 2014, 15, I had said, I think Tiger will win another tour event, but I don't think he'll ever win another major. And then he went out and won the tour championship, and we'll never forget that mob of people following him to the 72nd green. And then obviously the 2019 Masters was incredible. I'm guessing that if PointsBet was going to put odds on him ever winning a major, it would be 40 to 1. What do you think? I mean, look, I'm glad it's his right leg rather than his left. I feel like if it was his left, like his turning leg, then it would be even more in doubt. But a guy in his mid-40s post, you know, 5 back surgeries and now this, oof, couple of years ago, he couldn't even get out of bed. What do you think?
I go back and forth because you look at everyone who counted him out, and then he won the 2019 Masters, and it was like the comeback of the century. Yep. And so it's like, of course, Tiger, if anyone can do it, Tiger can do it. But at the same time, his crew is notoriously known for being secretive. And yes, there's part of me that maybe is thinking that there's more to it, or maybe he, who knows, like maybe his injuries are worse than they're saying, or maybe they're not as bad. So you're not going to know how he's doing until we see him again. And I think then that's the time where we can make the decision. It's like, okay, he is coming back or he's not coming back. I think that, again, this was a question that was also getting a lot of heat when you would ask if Tiger's going to come back to play golf. And they're like, no, don't talk about that.
Just make sure he can hug his kids again.
Yeah, right. Which of course, yes, like that's the most important thing. We're so happy that he's able to do that again. But we all want to see Tiger playing and healthy and happy. And it's just, you look at his life and everything that he's been through, and it's sad. I feel bad for him. Like, he has been through so much shit in his life.
Yeah. I mean, he's brought a lot of it on himself, but you can certainly still feel bad for people like that. One thing, Paige, I certainly hope he's always able to play in the PNC event, the father-son.
Yeah.
I mean, the joy that, you know, he and Charlie brought up to each other, and that, you know, the viewing public, I mean, that was amazing. I mean, all the videos out there, I think there was like a 5-minute compilation of father and son sort of mimicking each other. And of course the fist pump and the time on the range and all that. So hopefully he can at least play like casual semi-competitive golf. Can he beat these big guns on the PGA Tour? I mean, wow, that is extremely unlikely. Even you see a guy like Phil Mickelson, who is healthy, but once you hit that certain age, I mean, he's not even close now. So yeah, if I were offering you 50-1 Tiger to win a major, would you take the 50-1?
You got to take it. I mean, you got to take it. I mean, if we thought the comeback in 19 was amazing, this comeback will be the comeback of all comebacks. He will be considered the GOAT if he can come back and win even just a tournament, or just even play on the PGA Tour again. I think that would be a massive success. Talk about the reaction from everyone in the golf community and how they handled it at the tour event, WGC.
Yeah.
Because, again, it was a little odd. I don't know. It was just kind of weird. It almost, everyone wasn't on the same page, and there was a lot of confusion. And I think we can talk about the Max Homa incident on Twitter.
Yes.
But it wasn't like, I almost feel like the tour, if they wanted to honor Tiger Woods, they would have handed everyone ribbons for him. I don't know. The black and red thing, some people were doing it, some people weren't doing it. I think it was kind of this weird like divide, and it wasn't because they didn't want to do it. It's because it was such a last second thing, and people couldn't get shirts in time. It just kind of turned into this huge deal that almost like took over what the whole meaning was, and that was to like show support to Tiger Woods. And it was almost like, if you didn't wear red on Sunday, then like, fuck you, you don't care about Tiger Woods. It was weird. It was like the weird thing.
Very weird. And then Tiger came out with a statement, I think last night, saying, thank you so much. You know, essentially it was great seeing the red shirt. So it actually did mean a lot to him. The Max Homa stuff was wild. Obviously he is, you know, I think the funniest man on the PGA Tour on Twitter. He's experienced a lot of different things on Twitter. And he said this was the weirdest reaction he'd ever gotten. You know, when he puts out that tweet saying, hey, I'd love to wear red, but I don't have the shirt and I'm contractually obligated to have such and such logos. And people were still pissed at him, like a decent number. I went through his replies last night. Hey, buddy, you're a millionaire. Go to Dick's Sporting Goods. It's like, guys, you kind of don't really grasp the whole like golf business here. And by the way, Hagrid didn't die, okay? He broke his leg in a car accident. Like, you're not spitting on him if you don't wear red. I don't know if you're a Seinfeld fan, Paige, but it reminded me of there's an episode where Kramer goes on an AIDS walk to support, but he refuses to wear a ribbon, and he ends up like in a circle. He's being ganged up because people are so upset. Why do you refuse to wear the ribbon? It was like this Sunday. Why do you refuse to wear red? I mean, all of a sudden it became a bad guy if you're wearing a blue shirt.
Yeah, the reaction that Max Homa got was so surprising. One, I don't think people realize that when you are under contract with a clothing company, you don't have an option to wear right. something else. Not only was it just the shirt, but it has all the logos too. So he has like three or four logos put on his shirt. And before every single tournament week, these guys have their clothes sent to them, basically still in the wrappers. And that's the outfit that they're going to wear. And so, yes, it was really easy for all the Nike sponsored athletes to wear Tiger red because Tiger has only worn Nike. And if you're also a Nike sponsored athlete, you only have the swoosh. You don't have any other patches or anything on you. So yes, you can probably go out to Dick's Sporting Goods and like get a red shirt. People are like, well, Patrick Reed did it. Patrick Reed doesn't have a clothing sponsor. So he can wear whatever he wants. Same with, you know, Justin Thomas now. So yes, of course, if you could do it, you probably should do it. But the reaction that Max got was like unbelievable. People were genuinely really upset about him. And he, being the good guy that he is, he kept putting tweets out to kind of explain where he's coming from. And it almost made it worse because people started to nitpick at every little thing that he was saying. And it really pissed me off because we constantly talk about athletes need to show more personality. We want them to be more active on social media. We want them to seem more real. And you have someone like Max who is so genuinely nice and he cares so much about, you know, connecting with people on social media. He doesn't have to do that. He doesn't need it. He doesn't have to do it. He's doing it because he likes to do it. And it gives you guys an inside look. And so for them to then turn on him and say that what he was doing was like not okay. And he doesn't care about Tiger and all of this stuff. Shit like that makes good guys like Max not want to be on social media anymore. It's different for people who do this for a living. So my job is social media. So I know that when I say certain things, I'm going to get the good and the bad. But these professional athletes, they don't have to do this. It's not an obligation for them to do this. And so when you pick apart every little thing that they say, and it's not just Max, it's like across all the board with all the professional athletes, even entertainers, it's just the things that they create to, you know, these trolls try to cancel these celebrities over is ridiculous. And I'm not saying that if you're a public figure that you don't, everyone has to agree with what you're saying. That's not what I'm saying. If you say something stupid on social media, you should be called out for it. But what Max did was a non-issue. It wasn't a big deal. It was just so stupid. So stupid. It drives me insane. Because you know what's really going to happen next week is he's probably going to have his agent tweet for him. And that would suck. You know what I'm saying? It's like, then you lose someone that's so great in golf because of like one little thing of people being stupid. Like, stupid people ruin good things.
So I think people would be curious because you have a bit of a following. How often are you about to tweet something or post something on Instagram? And then like, do you have the good page and the bad page on your shoulders? And is stuff like just right along the line? Do you ask yourself things before you post? And then ultimately, like if it's 50-50, do you hold back or do you go ahead?
I would say before, if I ever had any doubt, I would not push send. So normally it's different for each platform. So on Instagram, usually I'm looking, is it too much cleavage? Is it too sexy? If it's too sexy, then I kind of think about it. I'm like, what am I trying to project? What am I trying to say here? And sometimes I'm like, fuck it. Like, I don't care. I'm going to post a bikini picture. Like, I'm going to do what I want to do because I realized wearing a turtleneck or whatever, people are still going to call me a slut. So I might as well sex it up and have fun with it. And then on Twitter, I was always so careful about what I said. I never wanted to piss anyone off. I just was pretty, you know,
vanilla.
Uncontroversial. Yeah. I didn't want to like say anything wrong. And then now I almost do it on purpose. Like I'll say things to start a conversation because that's fun. Like that's what Twitter is. And I feel like you have to lean into it. And that's where these guys get a little, I think, weary of Twitter, because a nice guy like Max Homa, like he's probably not used to getting hate. And so when he gets a little bit of hate, it's really scary. And all of a sudden you think like everyone hates you and they're going to hate me forever. And then he starts like tweeting and tweeting and tweeting and making it worse. And what I do now is I lean into it. I know when I press send that I'm probably going to get a good amount of hate, and that's fine. That's great, you know, because that's getting more engagement. And so sometimes I try to do that on purpose, but it takes years to get to that point. When I first started on social media, I was like that. I was so scared to get hate. And anytime I got a bad comment, I would delete a tweet or delete a picture, and I didn't even want to deal with it. And now I'm like, bring it on. Like, let's have some, let's have some fun with this. Like, if you, what do they say? If you can't stand the heat, stay out of the kitchen. You know, like, I want that now. I want those conversations. I want people to troll me. I want it to be fun, because I think that's what you have to do on Twitter. You have to realize that there are trolls and there's people that are stupid. And so have fun with them. Like, so I'll be really sarcastic back. I'll fuck with them. And I think that's how you have to handle Twitter. But I have a different brand than a lot of people. So a lot of people don't have the luxury to say whatever they want to say. And you can't say things back to other people because your more conservative sponsors are like, oh, what are you doing? You know, I've definitely been in trouble a lot of times of things that I've said on Twitter or things that I post on Instagram. And I just don't give a shit anymore.
You got to have the attitude of like Patrick Reed in the Ryder Cup, right? All these dudes hate me, especially if I'm in Europe. They all want me to make a triple, and instead I'm going to make a 20 footer and I'm just going to start doing this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to start riling up the crowd, all that stuff. You know, I'm thinking about in the last, I think 24, 36 hours, I'm friends with Dan Dockich, that college basketball broadcaster. And God, he says so much stupid stuff. I love him. I think he's wonderful doing games, but he gets bored, and he's admitted that he will just basically write totally incendiary, controversial stuff on Twitter just out of sheer boredom. And it gets himself in trouble. And now he's in trouble with ESPN. And I texted him last night. And there are just certain times where I want to be like, dude, just, you know, go 75%. Okay. You know, it's not worth like losing a job over. It's not worth having to, you know, pull yourself off Twitter. Right now, he's got no Twitter account. It's kind of a long, convoluted story. People can look it up if they want to, but you know, certain times you wish people would just tone it down. Now, in terms of like Twitter hate, I don't know. I was experiencing a little bit of the angry mob when your boy Cam Smith started struggling, and I was getting the heat for it. I mean, the guy puts, I think, 5 balls in the water, and you were blaming me. What's up with that, Paige?
I hate you so much. And we're going to talk about this after the break. So keep on listening. So Teddy, I hate your guts, and I am honestly so mad at you because I had Cam Smith winning the WGC and he was leading on Saturday and then full on choked. I mean, I was so excited. So I was flying and my friend Dan was texting me the whole time, keeping me updated. And he's like, Cam's winning. And we both had Cam. And so we were really excited. And all of a sudden he's like, okay, 1 ball in the water. 2 balls in the water, 3 balls in the water. I mean, it was so disheartening because I was on such a high. I have come off like 2 really great weeks. My picks were doing well. I was feeling so confident.
You're like, I'm a fucking genius. I cannot be stopped.
Fucking genius. And I'm picking Cam Smith off of just a gut feeling. Like, that is how good I am. And he is winning this tournament. And then you tweet at me and say that Cam Smith is winning. And from that moment, shit hit the fan. He literally choked. I like don't know what happened. And even the next day, he hit a ball to like a foot of the pin, almost pulled out, and it rolled in the water. It was like, since that moment you said something, his whole round changed on Saturday and on Sunday too. I am like beyond upset about this. I'm shaken up. Very shaken up about this because, again, I was on this high. I was feeling confident, and now I'm rattled. My cage is rattled.
A few things in my defense. First of all, I put out that tweet. It was an act of love and admiration. Here you go. You say, I'm feeling like Cam is going to win this week, and he plays so well Thursday, Friday. So I put out the tweet as a sign of respect and admiration. Yeah, I was not trying to jinx this man. Somebody very, very close to me had a Cam top 20 bet and a Paige Nema bet for him to finish as the low Aussie, boosted from plus 300 to plus 350. So I was on the Cam train. I was not trying to mess with you. But then once you said, you know, I was the jinx, then at a certain point, I was sort of starting to enjoy that. I was starting to think, wow, do I have that much power? You know, I mean, I don't even have enough power to make my kids turn off their iPad, but do I have enough power to jinx this man who is a couple time zones away? And did he lose 5 golf balls on Saturday? I'm glad he was able to finish the round. Don't guys only carry like 6 with them?
So I would always carry 12 golf balls in my bag because I had this irrational fear of running out of golf balls. And so I always had 12 in my bag. But props to him. I mean, he finished out with a 67 on Sunday, got a top 10 finish. He was low Aussie. So, I mean, I made you some money, but it was so sad. I just can't get over it because I thought he was going to win. And let me tell you, I really think that I have like these gut instincts where like I'm always led in the right direction. And, you know, I've been wrong once, twice, 10, maybe 20 times regarding, you know, good guys that I was dating that I had, you know, a gut feeling about and it just didn't end well. So maybe this was just one of those things when it comes to guys, gut feelings just out the window.
Well, hopefully you think I'm a terrible guy and then you're wrong on that part, Paige.
I mean, I hate you now, so we're in a good place. But let's talk about the WGC.
Great.
I lost all interest after that Saturday round.
It's all about you. Huh?
It's all about me. It's all about me. Anyone who listens to this podcast knows it's all about me. But I lost a little interest after that because I wanted Cam Smith to win. So Morikawa ended up winning the tournament. He's so nice and he's great, but he's almost like too nice. And I just didn't like...
needs an edge.
Yeah, I just like didn't get really excited over his win. I know he like hits it really great. He's such a solid guy. And everyone that I've ever talked to has only said amazing things about him. But I want some fireworks. I want some drama. I want something when it comes to the winners in that final round. It was interesting. I mean, it got pretty tight there. Kind of came down to the stretch a little bit. You know, there's a few things here and there, but it was boring. I just, when he won, I'm like, I'm happy for you, but like, where's the drama? Where's the excitement?
You know, it wasn't Colin's fault. I mean, he played like too well. I think just the previous weeks, I mean, especially with Riviera, I mean, you can't have that every week where the ultimate local guy, Max Homa, has a 3-footer to win on the 72nd green at Riviera, you know, to make a birdie, to make all these tickets come true, everything. And then he blows the 3-footer and then they go to a playoff. I mean, we can't have this drama every week. Colin was amazing. I think if you want to be mad at anybody on Sunday, it was probably Koepka. Like, he had a chance to really put the pressure on. And then I think he was over the green. I think that was on 16. Beautiful up and down, but he just couldn't quite do it. Victor Hovland looks like he's 17 years old. Swings so hard, that guy. I mean, an amazing player. I had a Hovland top 10, so I was very pleased with that effort. Pretty good work by my pick, Rory McIlroy, T6. Matt Fitzpatrick also showed up. But Morikawa, I just love how... I love how he accelerates into the ball. Like, it seems like he's pretty deliberate going back, and then it's like, boom. Now, I couldn't pick him this week because he had this colossally bad putting week the week before. He was the worst putter in the field at Riviera among those who made the cut. So I'm like, wow, can he just like flip it, turn it around like that from one week to the next? And the answer is yes. That's how strange putting is, where he goes from like the worst guy of the top 70 players to pretty much lights out with that saw grip.
Well, after he won the PGA, people were saying he's going to be the next Tiger Woods. After what you saw him do at Concession, do you agree with that still? Or do you think that he still has a ways to go?
Well, hopefully he has a chauffeur if he's going to be the next Tiger Woods, because we can't have any more of this stuff. No, I mean, nobody's the next Tiger until, look, let's not slap that on anybody, but he is an amazing player. He is relentless. I think somebody called him like an assassin. Like when he has the lead, you feel great about it. I mean, is there a better iron player in the world right now? They are high. They are soft. He is just an amazing putter. So it just seems to be, I'm sorry, an amazing iron player. It just seems to be the putting where you wonder a little bit. Like, I guess a year ago or longer, he had issues with 2-footers, 3-footers, 4-footers. You don't want that on your resume when you're trying to win majors when it's tight. So before we anoint him anything, let's see if his putting is for real.
It's good to see two nice guys win back to back. It's like wins for the nice guys, because I always feel that you need to have like this edge to you to be successful. And I always felt I was playing, yeah, like I never had that like competitive edge. And I almost felt like I was too nice to be playing golf, where I was rooting for my playing competitors. I want everyone to have like a good time. And of course I wanted to play well, but I wasn't like, I want to rip your throat out and, you know, dominate you on the golf course. I just never had that like killer instinct. And I don't feel that from like Colin. He just seems like such a nice guy, where he's just like doing his own thing. So it's like, it's a win for the nice guys. You know, nice guys do finish first.
Well, I think you needed Tita Woods as your mom, because she was definitely a step on your throat type woman. I mean, I love those Tiger stories where, you know, Earl had, obviously he was the guiding force in Tiger's golfing life. And I thought that part was cool in the HBO documentary. Like, I had never seen the video of Earl swinging in the garage. God, what a beautiful swing he had. So no surprise that Tiger adopted that. But it was Tita who was the one who was just
But it's relentless. Weird, because my mom is like that. Like, my mom is very competitive, yeah. And she was a professional ballet dancer. So she trained me at like such a high level. And that was in like being homeschooled and then also with gymnastics and then with golf too. And so she was known as, you know, no one would come up to me on the putting greens at junior golf tournaments because my mom was always there watching and they were scared of my mom. And my dad is also really competitive too. I think I just, there was something with golf that I was not competitive with golf. I'm competitive with a lot of other things, especially yeah. like with what I do now. But with golf, I just never had that. Never had it.
So you're saying your mom was the Tanya Harding of the ballet industry? I mean, she would, what would she just put like mean stares at her competition? What do you do if you're a fiercely competitive ballerina?
Survive. Like she would tell me some stories about training, but she just wanted to be the best at everything that she would do. And like, I think that's the same thing with the way that she parents too, both way my parents have raised us. It's like they want to be the best parents they can possibly be. And I carry that into what I do. But again, with golf, I think it's because there's just something so tied with ego yeah. with golf that it's almost like you can't be competitive with that. Because I would look at girls next to me, and it didn't matter if I outworked them, if I was stronger than them, you know, more fit than them.
Yes.
They could still beat me. And yeah. that killed me inside, because it's like with other sports, if you're not in good shape or you're not training hard, then you're not going to see results. But with golf, it really doesn't matter at all.
So I find this page with people I play golf with, most of them are genuinely happy. Say if I'm playing well, like if I make a birdie, even if we're betting for money. And then there are a couple of guys who are totally not. I have one friend named Keon, and it seems like whenever I make a good putt to win a hole, he screams, "God damn it." So that's become the joke. Like whenever I do something good, you know, he screams. I mean, you know, it's like $20 or something, but he acts like he's just lost his entire home. I prefer playing with guys who are genuinely happy for you when you play well. And I think I am as well. Like if somebody makes a birdie in my group, even if that's sticking it in my back, and even if he just like won the entire front nine and won all the skins, I'd like to think I'm a good sport. And you are as well. When people now, but you're not going to be that way if I beat you, right?
No, I am. So when people play with me, they seem to have career rounds, and they say it's because I'm so supportive when they're playing with me. Cool. But again, there's just like certain people that it would hurt a little bit more when they would play well. And especially like in college when it was either with my teammates, when I knew they were out all night drinking and not doing what they should be doing. And then they would qualify ahead of me or they would play better. That hurt a little bit more because again, it's like, if I'm doing everything I need to do to be successful and I wasn't successful, and then you look at someone else who gives zero fucks about what they're doing and they're playing well, that's what I hated so much about golf. And I couldn't handle that. Like, I could not handle the fact that if you outwork someone, it does not matter with golf, like at all.
Talent trumps everything. By the way, can we talk about virtual Paige? So I watched your YouTube where you, you know, grinding McGrinderson there, making nine pars on that windy day. I took a slight issue with you playing from the whites. You know, it's so many 340-yard par fours. A little soft.
Yeah, so I did this really fun YouTube video where on Perfect Swing, I played myself virtually. Well, there wasn't too many options. I had to wear a polo. I couldn't find a tank top in the pro shop. So I played myself virtually and then in real life. But it was funny because when I went out to the course play, it was blowing 40 mile an hour. Ooh, I mean, it was probably 20, but it was a lot of wind.
60 miles
and
an hour,
I never play in weather that's not absolutely perfect. Now, if it's not like 75 and sunny, I'm like, I'll skip it. But it was nice to like grind again. And I think that's what we saw too at concession. I'm just going to say now that course looked impossible.
Yeah.
So, so hard.
Yeah, that really did. By the way, it looked like you were hitting good knockdowns and stuff. It looked like you were making good contact, staying down on it. I haven't seen you play enough to know if that's your normal swing, but I was pretty impressed with that. It is between the bunkers and, you know, Billy Horschel missing a fairway by a couple feet and then announcing he wanted to take his pants off. And then he ends up, you know, rolling it up and going backwards baseball cap. I mean, we like to see stuff like that, right?
Standard of that, though, if I ever said I want to take my pants off, I'd be called a whore. Billy Horschel just takes all the clothes off, no issue.
Oh yeah, it's a great double standard. I mean, we can, you know, we can take a whiz on the golf course. It's good to be a guy, Paige. There's no question. There's we get a lot more you know, a lot more liberal attitude. But if anybody is calling you names on social media, can you just block them? Because they're
no, I thrive off of the hate now. I'm a different beast.
Man, all right, you know what? I'm going to see if I can block them for you. People should not be name calling you, man. That pisses me off.
Whatever. Yeah. We got to talk about the Arnold Palmer too, because that's coming up. Another hard golf course. Another really hard golf course. The field, I was looking through the field. Okay, it's fine. I really feel like Victor Hovland's going to have a really great week. I also think that Taylor Gooch is going to have a good week.
Gooch. Tell me about Taylor Gooch. I know he's got a cool name. And his first name is, I believe, spelled T-A-L-O-R. Who is he?
Who does that?
What's up with Taylor? What is that? Come on.
I have a feeling. I have another feeling. I have a gut feeling about him.
Got a good feeling about this.
Do not tweet about him, Teddy, or I will actually kill you.
I am going to go ahead and jinx Taylor Gooch right now. But I'm sorry, Tyler. Who is he? He's an American? He's young. What's his story?
Yeah, he played at OSU. He's been playing pretty decent lately. Good young talent.
Okay.
I just think he's a good, solid top 10. Great value to coming into that tournament. But Hovland's the guy. Coming off of last week, he's been playing really solid. He's
interesting.
Just really struggling to get that win. Little Tony Finau action.
Yeah, so sort of like he's like a Finau or almost like a Schauffele kind of guy who's struggling to close. So I had forgotten, I was looking at the scores from last year. Hopefully you haven't looked. Speaking of unusual pronunciation of names, you said it's Churl Hatton, I believe, who won this event last year. Tell me what you think he shot in the final round last year and still managed to win the Arnold Palmer Invitational.
I know it's an insanely hard golf course, and he won at 4 under, so he had to have shot probably like a 73, 72.
74. So I think my name a bet this week is going to ask what are the odds that anyone will shoot four rounds in the 60s? Because it almost never happens. So Justin Ray, who is at Justin Ray Golf on Twitter, this guy's amazing. I was asking him, he said three players since 1990 have shot all four rounds in the 60s. Only three players. The last one was Kevin Chappell in 2016. So holy crap, what a hard course when the wind kicks up.
I've never played there before. I just stayed on property once when I had some meetings in Florida, but it looked impossible. There's just something about Florida golf that I despise with everything inside me. I grew up in Colorado on, you know, nice bent grass, and you go to Florida and it's just like this gross, like twisty Bermuda. You can't chip out of it. It's sticky. Greens are really grainy. It's really hard to read those greens. And I could never, ever play well on the East Coast, especially like in Florida. That was always a trouble spot for me. I couldn't do it. Like, I could not figure out how to play there.
Yeah, I have like no juice at any courses in Florida. So I rarely go down there to play. I want to play either in the Northeast or in the LA area or in Vegas or in Arizona. Can I sneak in a quick question to you? So I have friends who are going down on my cousin, the spring training in Arizona, and he's looking for recommendations on public golf courses to play. Are there any that have a Page special, or are there any that you can mention now? Because I think a lot of people are headed down to catch some spring training and play some golf.
No Page special. So I've been practicing mostly out at Talking Stick now. I love that golf course. Good public golf course. Staff there is really nice, really great. You know, it's been difficult, honestly, to find a course in Arizona for me to play and practice out. It's just so busy all the time, and they're not super accommodating. So I'm lucky to be at Talking Stick. But once you play one of the courses, they all kind of look the same when you get that desert landscape.
Sure.
So if you want something that's not deserty, I would say some really great courses would be, it depends on price point as well, especially during right now, because it's prime. So you're going to be playing decent golf courses for a pretty penny. But I would say Talking Stick's great. Camelback Golf Course, two courses out there. Both of them are really nice, not desert. Mountain Shadows, awesome par three course. And then if you're looking for something more deserty, Greyhawks, also awesome, two courses out there. So you can play either or. They're both very different, both great. If you want to travel, you can go to Quintero, nice views. But again, if you play one desert golf course, they tend to all look the same after a while. So desert golf isn't my favorite type of golf because it's target and it's just not that aesthetically pleasing. But there are some good golf courses out here. Any golf course you play is going to be pretty decent here.
Man, so you don't like Florida. You don't like Target. I mean, we're getting small here. Like, how about tree line? Can you handle tree line golf courses?
I love tree line golf courses. Okay. And I love link style courses. So I always played well on link style courses because I'm very creative with my game and I like to work shots. And I feel like that's where you can work the most shots, especially like around the greens. Tree line courses are awesome too. I like things where I can hit it wayward and find it somehow and then hit it. That's always great for me. And so at desert golf, you hit it wayward and then you're in a cacti. So then you're screwed. So I don't like that. Or if you play Florida golf, you hit it wayward, you're in the water.
Yeah.
So also not great. So I'm very particular with the golf courses that I like. If I didn't like a golf course or didn't fit my eye, I played so shitty on it. I could never just overcome it mentally because I'm a head case.
Well, I'm working on the ultimate golf itinerary for you when you come to Chicago. Pretty good chance it will include Chicago Golf Club, which is like a top 10 and very linksy with incredible greens. And then I have a group, we call our event the White Claw Invitational. And we go up to Erin Hills, which is, of course, a U.S. Open course. And then we play Sand Valley Mammoth Dunes. And my crew's expecting there to be a little Page cameo there. Those are very wide open courses. Mammoth Dunes has fairways that are 200 yards wide. So I think you would find it to your liking.
Well, I can't wait. I'm nervous that I'm going to pick up your horrible putting and some bad swing mechanics, but I think I can overcome that and we'll have a good time.
It's going to be great. How many shots are you going to give me, by the way? What are you, like a one or a two? What's your index these days?
So when I was playing professionally, it was around a +4, +3. Now I don't really keep a handicap, but I just say I'm scratched because that's the easiest way.
Awesome. Seven aside. Let's go.
Seven aside. Ouch. Ah. Ouch. Okay. I think I can.
You saw my swing.
Oh my God. What do you shoot consistently?
I'm generally like an 87 to 91 guy.
I'm not giving you 7 aside, sandbagger.
7 aside, if you shoot 72 plus 14 is 86. Sounds fair to me. I mean, we'll negotiate. I might settle for 6 aside, but you as a former professional, I think you should still be confident after seeing how I swing that you can beat me by 12.
Ugh, God. Well, we'll see. So back to Donald Palmer for a quick second. Who do you like? So I already said I think I'm liking Victor Hovland. We'll obviously give our picks tomorrow on the range with PointsBet, which is posted on YouTube. So you guys can go check that out. But just give someone, someone that jumps out at you right now.
I think we're going to be looking at guys who play well on ridiculously tough courses and guys who play great in the wind. Now, I was noticing last year, let's see. So it's usually non-Americans who do well in this event. I think there've been multiple, like 3 or 4 in a row, non-Americans. And that makes sense because the guys from Australia and the guys from Europe play in so much more wind than the Americans do. So I'm not ready to commit just yet, but I'm going to be definitely picking some non-bros, some non-USA guys. Like I said, Rory McIlroy, he's rounding in form. Like, I feel like it was only his B game and he was still, I believe, T6 as my selection last week. So I can't pick Rory 2 weeks in a row, though. That would be boring. So we'll sleep on it and I'll come up with a good one for you.
Yeah, we'll give our picks on the range. Don't forget that. And I'm also doing the Make It Rain promo if you haven't checked that out yet. 30.
Rain dance.
The Make It Rain dance. 30 days, 30 games, $3 million in free bets. It's been pretty successful so far. People are really enjoying it. So I pick a game. You guys will pick a team. And for every three-pointer your team makes, you get $3 in free bets. I fucking nailed that.
Your 17th try was the one where you got it right.
I've been saying this for probably 20 days now, and I finally nailed it.
By next year, you're going to really have it down. But I was a little disappointed. I might have thrown a little bit down on Ohio State. Ohio State did not make it rain Sunday. 4 three-pointers. What the fuck up with that? Come on, Iowa blew out that team. I don't know what's going on with the Buckeyes now, but it is March. It's the best calendar flip of the year, February to March. PointsBet, we're obviously planning like massive promotional money giveaways and whatnot once March Madness hits. We'll have obviously time to talk about this, but do you love the NCAA tournament as much as I would expect you to?
I love college basketball. Yep. I would say it's one of my more favorite things to watch. I haven't gone into the NBA. I just don't really have a team that I like watching. And I just like the way that they play better in college basketball. It's just more exciting to me. So I love March Madness. It's one of my favorite things. I make a bracket every single year. I was actually pretty successful last year. They have like this bracket competition and I was in the top percentage of it. Not gonna brag, but I do love college basketball. Who's your team?
So I went to Northwestern. Northwestern has been in the NCAA tournament a grand total of one time. Fortunately, I was there for it. They played in Salt Lake City. They beat Vanderbilt and then got completely hosed by Gonzaga. This guy, Zach, I forget his last name right now, talented big man, literally put his hand through the rim to negate a Northwestern shot. Everybody in the arena saw it, but the three officials, not cool. And then Chris Collins got a technical foul. Don't blame him. So I grew up loving St. John's in New York. I don't think the Johnnies are having a particularly good year. I haven't thought about them in months. So you know who I like? University of Illinois. Now, if people are listening to this in my area, they're going to laugh because they think I'm such a hater for U of I. I'm kind of friends with Brad Underwood, their coach. We've played golf a couple times. So I would like to see the Illini do well. Exciting team, a lot of offense. They have a guy named Io Desunmu from the Chicago area. So I might just, kind of bandwagon jump and get on the Illini for a bit.
I love a good bandwagoner. So I went to U of A and then I transferred to San Diego State. And I just go back and forth depending on who's better that year. they're both pretty decent basketball programs, so it's always been fun. It was really cool when Arizona went to the Final Four, and that was awesome. But no, I that's pretty much it. And then after that, I just root for my bracket.
Exactly. Whenever people say who you're rooting for, it's the answer is simple. It's whoever you have money on, whoever can make you look good, whoever can make your wallet fatter. I mean, these old allegiances, like, you know, I grew up like if the Yankees lost a game, it would break my heart and I'd be in a pissy mood for a couple hours. And then you realize, like another Seinfeld reference, it's just laundry. You know, I mean, you're just rooting for laundry. So the most important thing is to be loyal to yourself and your picks. So, you know, 2 weeks ago, I'm rooting for Homa. Last week, I'm rooting for Rory and Matty Fitz and Thomas Dietrich, almost snuck in a top 20. So, yeah, we'll be rooting for wherever the Bucks are.
Well, you must be excited because baseball is back now.
Yeah, but like my baseball knowledge sucks. I mean, there are entire teams where I can't name a player. You just can't follow everything, right?
Are you a Cubs fan?
I would say I am a convenient Cubs fan. So I'm in walking distance to Wrigley Field. It's just kind of more fun for the neighborhood when the Cubs are doing well. When I was working for the Tribune, I wanted to see the Cubs win because then I would go to the ballpark more often. Like, it's more fun to cover Cubs than White Sox just because, again, I can walk there and it's a fun atmosphere. So it would all kind of be based on selfish reasons. But bottom line is, the most important thing is whoever you bet to start the season to win the World Series, that is the number one team you should be a fan of.
I was playing a tournament in Chicago, a charity event, and I was playing with this huge baseball fan, like diehard baseball fan. And I was like, oh, like, who's your team? And he's like, oh, Big Sox guy, like Big Sox guy. And I was like, that's really weird. Why are you a Red Sox fan in Chicago?
Oh, Paige.
And he gave me this look that I have never seen before. And he didn't talk to me for the rest of the round.
Yes.
I just broke his heart. Like, the White Sox never even crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Not once.
So there's a total complex that White Sox fans have. They are, you know, there'd be so many days where, you know, the Cubs, or so many years, I should say, where the Cubs are below 500 and there's still 39,000 people at Wrigley. And the White Sox are the scrappy team that gets like no attention and no love. ESPN, not intentionally, but it's like totally mistreated the White Sox over the years. Like, they'll come out with graphics occasionally that completely forget that the White Sox won the World Series. So you just fed into that complex so completely, so unintentionally. That's kind of hilarious, but yeah. The White Sox fans think everybody always has it against them. Like,
yeah,
here's the classic last year. I'm talking to a Sox fan, and the Sox got off to a great start last year. And he says to me, he goes, oh, you know what's going to happen this year? We're going to win the World Series, but because of COVID and a shortened season, we're not going to get the credit for it. And I'm like, wait a second. You're already planning the complex. You're already saying we're going to win and nobody's going to give us credit. That is the epitome of being a White Sox fan.
So I hated baseball for the longest time. And then last year with COVID, I was like, okay, I'm going to get into it. It's a shorter season. If I can make it through. And I actually got really into baseball. But the running joke was that I would just pick a team that was playing well and just bandwagon on that team. And so this year with a full season, I don't know what I'm going to do or who I'm going to pick. So send us a DM at the Playing Around Instagram account, or email us at par@iheartmedia.com. We want to hear from you guys. Give us some reasons why, who I should root for. I need help. I need a lot of help this season. I don't even know if I'm going to make it through the whole season. I like the shorter season.
So I'm going to nominate the White Sox as an apology to that fellow that you offended. Plus, it's a good color scheme. I mean, you like wearing black, right?
I love black.
Oh, so black and white. It's a cool color scheme. And honestly, this is the time to jump on the White Sox bandwagon. They have like a ridiculously good young team, massive talent. This guy named Luis Robert, or Louis Robert, if you want to go there. His nickname is the Panther. He plays center field, and like on a routine pop-up to right, he covers so much ground that he's like hip to hip with the right fielder. I am telling you, Paige, adopt the White Sox. They need the love. It's a good team. I think they might be fourth or fifth in terms of outright to win the World Series. And, you know, when you come to Chicago, maybe they'll be in town.
Okay. White Sox are taking a lead right now. I will pick any team, or I will consider any team, but the Padres. Fuck the Padres. You guys know why. We're not even going to get into it because I will get way too heated. Worst fan base in all of sports. Worst jerseys. The brown and like puke yellow gold. No, not having it. Not the Padres. So if you guys write in the Padres, I will not hear it. I will not accept it.
Man, so on our content team, Ryan Arnold, I believe he's a big Padres guy. So
he is.
I'm just going to set you two up like on a content call to just like, just verbally go at it.
He'll win. I really have no reason why I actually really
the color scheme. Just, I mean, that's a good
it just reason. Happened and I'm going with it now. No offense, Padres fans. I don't actually hate you. Just some of you I dislike strongly. But we're going to take a break. And we are going to get into TNA. Hey guys, we are back with some TNA. We're starting off with a golf question. Question is, I've taken the game seriously for about 20 years now. Got pretty darn good, but I don't truly understand how the bounce of wedges work or how to use the bounce as they say on TV all the time. Will you please explain or give examples? Thanks in advance. This is a tricky one. So this one's hard without having a visual of seeing where the bounce is on the wedge. But basically, when you're laying it on the ground, it is that section that's laying on the ground. That's what the bounce is. And so when you use the bounce, instead of using the leading edge, which is in front of the bounce, you will dig the leading edge in, and most people will get stuck. That's where they hit those like really thin shots or really fat shots. So using the bounce is basically just kind of skimming it off, almost like bouncing your club across the ground. And that's how you get those nice high shots off of those really tight lies. And so if you open the club a little bit more, then you'll be able to use the bounce a little easier. There's different degrees of bounce. You can shave it off. It's really personal to like how you work your hands through the ball. So my bounce is going to be different than your bounce, and same for the next person. So if you really like to use your hands through it, flip it through, you're going to have a lot of bounce. And it's always for different courses too. So guys on tour, they're going to have different bounce than even I'm going to have. They're going to have probably a lot more bounce. So it's really difficult to explain, but I like, personally, my bounce, I like it pretty shaved. So mine almost looks like it. There's no hard edges on my wedges. And that really helps me throw my hand through the ball. I like the way that feels. There's really no dig at all. So that is a bounce question. I think I definitely will have to do a whole YouTube video on it. Again, it is one of the most difficult things to explain without having a visual, because you need to see the different bounces and what I'm talking about and what it looks like. And also you need to feel it as well. This is something that I can't really explain to you. You're going to have to go out there, maybe go to a club champion, get fit for wedges, and you can feel the different bounces. And that's how you're going to find which one works for you. You're not just going to be able to pick it off the rack and say, oh, this bounce is this, I need to get this one. You really need to test your wedges out and feel what works for you. Because again, it's a personal preference and really specific to how you work your hands through the ball. And also the courses that you're playing. If you're playing courses where it's not really tight lies or hard golf courses, your bounce is going to be different. So again, maybe I'll do a full YouTube video on bounce, but that hopefully cleared nothing up for you, because I don't think I explained that well, like at all. It's just such a hard concept. And again, it's all visual, and it's really hard to explain.
You lost me 9 seconds into that. my bunkering philosophy is take the 60 degree, swing hard and pray. Sometimes it comes out high and soft, and oftentimes I scull it over the green.
Yeah, it's bounces weird. Short game is weird. I think people overcomplicate short game so much, and there's so many different techniques on how to chip or how to hit certain shots, and you just need to do what feels comfortable to you. It's not as mechanical as your full swing. When I'm chipping or I'm hitting certain shots, I'm not focused on the positions that I am in. I'm letting my hands do all of the work. And especially with putting too, I think people are so focused on what they need to do and the positions they need to hit. And it's really all about feel and practice. People just don't practice their short game enough. And they will just go and hit drivers for 20 minutes and go play. It's like, if you have any excess time, work on your short game, work on your putting, because you're going to save so many shots by doing so. And that's the only way you're going to get good at short game, is because it is all about feel. And if you literally, I will see a shot, feel a shot, hit a shot. And that's how I do it. I'm not thinking, okay, I need to hit this position in the rough and I need to do this with my hands. It's all about seeing that shot and feeling that shot.
Yeah, I practice about 30 minutes a year on my short game, which is why you're giving me six shots a side when we play.
Oh, now it's six? Okay, I like six better than seven.
12 is my lucky number. I think that's a fair number there. Seven a side sounds kind of pathetic, to be honest.
Okay, Teddy, I heard you have a question for me in TNA today.
So my question is, what's the worst bunker shot you've ever hit? Like, did you ever hit a bunker shot into the water?
So I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again because I think it's funny. I was practicing when I was in high school with my mom, and she would put me, she knows nothing about golf. And so she would put me in these really difficult situations where it's like a downhill bunker shot and very lie. And she's like, you can't leave until you hit 10 of them within 2 feet.
Wow.
And there was this incredibly difficult bunker shot, and I could not do it. Physically, I just could not do it. And I don't care if it was Phil fucking Mickelson, he was not going to hit it within 2 feet. And so I was getting increasingly angry at my mom, and we were going back and forth. And this is when times weren't so great with us. I was, you know, 15, 16 years old. I was being homeschooled. I was hormonal. I was a bitch. Like, I was such a bitch to my mom. And I'm sorry, Mom. I was horrible. I was a horrible child. And we were fighting on the practice area. And I just said, Mom, like, I literally cannot do this. You're being stupid right now. Like, we're going to have to go. And she's like, no, like, you're not leaving until you do this. And so she turned her back to me to go pick up the golf balls. And I bladed it right into her back. Right into her back, full smile, like no regret. She was so mad at me.
You seriously didn't feel bad? She's
not
got like
one
dimples
bit.
In her back.
She was so, and my mom, she never gets mad. Like, she never ever gets mad. She's only yelled at me 2 times in my entire life.
Wow.
And that was one of the times.
Wow. That is amazing. There's so much interesting material there. You purposely blade a wedge to hit your mom. And that's one of only 2 times she's gotten mad at you. Fascinating. As somebody who has daughters, I yell at my kids 2 times an hour. So I appreciate her restraint.
Anytime my mom is really mad, she goes, I'm so mad I could spit. And I know after she says that, that I'm just going to get yelled at. And like, that's the cue for being yelled at. I think the other time was when I lied about my homework at one point. So those were the two times.
Man, you were a good girl growing up, huh? If you're not like, if those are the times that you got under her skin.
You know, when I say I was a bitch to my mom, I definitely was very sassy, but I could have done a lot worse. I never really got in trouble. I was very scared of my parents. And that was probably the one time that I did something that that was bad. Like, it was really bad. And I did not feel sad or bad or anything about it whatsoever.
Well, for a future TNA, I am going to explore. I could ask some probably questions about guys with you, getting to know each other a little bit better. I want to find out if, if this is for real, that you never did anything with a guy or drinking as a teenager to get your parents upset. But I think we'll save that for a future app, right?
I literally went to college as a freshman being homeschooled, not knowing what alcohol was. Wow. I asked what hard alcohol was at my first college party.
Yeah, I'm sure you found out pretty quickly.
It was rough. I didn't drink until like a while into it because I was so, 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 so scared I was going to get in trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one sip and I was a different person.
And then things started to get a lot more fun.
Life was great. I don't remember much of it.
Exactly.
Well, I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. We always love the support. I also want to take the time to say I loved your feedback and how kind you were with this new direction and everything that we're doing. Do want to clarify, though, that we're going to be mixing it up. We're going to be doing things that are different and trying to make it interesting and having really great guests on as well. So I know you guys were concerned that it was only going to be sports all the time, 24/7, and that's not it. I'm still going to get open and honest and personable about my life. We're going to have some laughs. We're going to make it fun. But again, just changing the direction a little bit. And so I'm glad you guys liked the first episode. Hopefully you also enjoyed this one. So keep on listening and you can find us here next time.
Loved it, Paige. Thank you.
Thank you.
Follow Playing Around with Paige Renee on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.